You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the office of the Baltimore office of Van Epperen. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Laura Van Epperen, and Jeff Davis Van Epperen. Now, we've got a great lineup of guests for you on our show today, including Marcus Stevens, Executive Creative Director, Plank Industries, Laura Van Epperen, Kathy Nice, Director of Marketing and Communications, Maryland Auto Insurance, and John Cunningham, President and Founder of Licensed to Innovate. I'd like to introduce our first guest, Marcus Stevens, Executive Creative Director of Plank Industries. Marcus, what is Plank Industries?
Good morning, Herb. Plank Industries is the private investment arm for the CEO of Under Armour, Kevin Plank, and his family.
So, the founder of Under Armour, how long have you known him and how long have you been working with him?
So I've known Kevin since 1997, a little over about 20 years now.
So you guys ended up making a lot of money together. You spoke about ringing the bell, on the stock exchange.
Yeah, we did pretty well with the brand.
So you did pretty well with the brand. I understand you started a philanthropic arm and give back arm as well that you're involved with as well. So you've continued the relationship with him.
Indeed. I now work for the private
All right. Side. And where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Cumberland, Maryland, Western Maryland.
All right. So you're from Maryland. And so I understand that, you know, you've done really well helping take a company public, and now you're giving back to the community. What happened to you at the age of five?
Herb, at the age of five, my father passed in Western Maryland.
Was he sick previously?
Not at all. Healthy. Pillar of health. He was number two tennis singles.
So what happened?
Cerebral hemorrhage. It was an aneurysm.
And how'd you find out about it?
I watched it happen.
You what?
I watched it happen.
You were
there? On the
front
steps of our house. Yes. Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. How did your dad's passing affect you? How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have one older brother, Derek.
He's 5 years old. So you have one older brother. He's 5 years older. You're 5 years. What happened to the family? What happened to the dynamic in the family with dad passing suddenly?
It changed drastically. We became a single family home. We became very close to each other. I think that we really realized that life is short and started to really appreciate the moments much more.
Uh-huh. Didn't you tell me when you were about the age of 10 you would do some stuff with your mom? What was that?
Yeah, my mom was involved. When we moved to Prince George's County, my mom got involved in social work. So she ran family emergency shelters and women's shelters. So I spent a lot of time in those homeless shelters.
You spent time in the homeless shelters starting at the age of 10. What were you doing in those shelters?
Yes, sir. Oftentimes, just, you know, crosswords or entertaining myself, just passing the time, but it grew into becoming much more involved.
Like what? What do you mean?
They were family shelters, so there was a lack of fathers in a lot of those shelters, so I would be a role model for young boys, play, teach.
How young were you when you became a role model for the other boys?
I think about 10, you know, 9 or 10 or so was when that began.
Wait a minute. You didn't have a father, and you became a role model as a father. What was going on there?
That's a great question. I had great role models. I had uncles, grandfather, my grandfather, coaches that also played a role
So you naturally took on a role of helping other kids at the age of 10, helping mentor them?
Yes. Maybe not naturally. Yes, naturally, but I think it was under the guidance of my mom as well. It was just the thing to do. Yeah.
So you ended up making a lot of money. And you got involved, you know, you and the founder of Under Armour, and you've continued the relationship, getting involved with other businesses, but you also started a philanthropic arm. And you told me you really found that much more meaningful. What was the thing about, you told me your mother had some check boxes that you hadn't checked off or something. What was that all about?
Yeah, you've mentioned the economic success that we had at Under Armour a few times. And while, you know, she appreciated that I was comfortable economically, she never felt socially that, you know, I'd done my full contribution. So she had a couple boxes. I think she wanted me to be the first black president of the United States, but Obama beat me to it.
And what was the effect? You mentioned about you had this image of what a dad should be. What was that all about? What are you talking about there?
Yeah, when your father passes when you're 5 years old, you know, the lore that you're going to get is going to be all the great things that he did. So it tends to build a Superman dad image in your head. And I grew up with this very fantastic image of my father while I watched some of my friends, you know, families, you know, fall apart and separate.
So your dad passed when you were five. You started working in homeless shelters when you were 10. And you ended up making a lot of money with the founder of Under Armour. And now you're involved with building some other businesses, but also giving back. And how does this super image of your dad affect your giving back to the community nowadays?
He was very involved in the community. He was a coach, and I think he used that coaching as a pathway to mentorship. In fact, a lot of the people that I hear the stories about my father from are, you know, individuals that he coached that are now.
And how are you giving back nowadays? How's this super image of a dad? How's that affecting how you're giving back?
Yeah, I work a lot, so it started as coaching, and now it's become more philanthropy in the neighborhoods and in the proximate, you know, neighborhoods to where I work.
What do you mean philanthropy? What are you talking about?
So we run, you know, a workforce development program out of the Foundry. It's just, you know, I guess it's capitalism with a soul, and make sure that everything has a meaning and a purpose.
Wait a minute. I read the newspapers.
Go ahead.
It's a soul. What was that? Capitalism with a soul?
Yes.
How can you put those two words together?
That's very difficult. It's innovation. It's something that hasn't really been done well in America, I believe. But it's something that we're really focusing on here.
But you're finding a lot of meaning in this.
I am indeed.
How old are you now?
42, sir.
And why are you? What's going on with you? Why is this so important to you now?
I'm a marketer. I build brands.
And how young were you when you recognized brands?
5, 6.
What was going on? How young? Give me an example of how you were recognizing brands.
So yeah, I was early to that game. Shoes. I think it was through, you know, I was a kid, and I think it was through tennis shoes. It was probably the first experience, you know, when the new brand name shoe came out, and my neighborhood turned into the Olympics, and everybody thought they were a few seconds faster.
So that really impressed you. That really affected you.
Yes.
All right. Let's go back to the question now of how you're finding meaning in your life at the age of 42.
Yes.
So how are you finding meaning in your life at 42 now that you've got some money and you understand what brands are all about?
Helping create the same opportunity for other people that I've been fortunate enough to have, you know.
But you didn't have a father.
That didn't stop me from having opportunity.
What do you mean?
It definitely was, you know, makes things more difficult on the family dynamic. But I think I was surrounded by optimists. I've had plenty of opportunity. I've always just worked my hardest to...
How young were you when you started making money?
I was third, fourth grade selling candy in school.
Whose idea was it for you to sell the candy?
It probably was another young entrepreneur's idea, and I thought I could probably do it better or cheaper.
So you understood, you saw a market that you thought you could do better or cheaper. And what was the next step in your entrepreneurial career after the age of 9?
Yeah, after it was the 80s. So in that point in time, I think... the next trend was haircuts. So I became a barber at probably 9 or 10 years old.
So you're 5 years old when you realize it. You're 5 years old when dad passes, and you're also 5 or 6 years old when you realize about brands because sneakers, because people are, your friends think they're running faster.
Sneakers and cars. I think the older men were talking about cars and the younger kids were talking about sneakers, but yeah.
You're 9 years old, 10 years old, and you're identifying there's a need for candy and cutting hair, so you're identifying markets, you're aware of brands, but you're telling me the fulfillment now.
Herb, I think it was more about identifying needs, you know, so it wasn't necessarily you know, the candy thing was a need that I had probably to get cheap candy and saw that I could also make money doing it. And then haircuts weren't accessible. And, you know, social credibility in the 80s depended a lot on your high top fee.
But you think making money is a good thing and you're actually combining capitalism with soul? Tell us more about that. I'm trying to figure this one out.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you do well, you can do good.
What?
When you do well.
I don't see that in the newspaper. What are you talking about?
When you do well, it gives you the opportunity and the privilege to do good. And that's really what, you know, I believe Plank Industries and the soul of the Sagamore Brands is about right now.
But in an innovative way, Marcus.
In a very innovative way, yes. I mean, it's about creating opportunity and not charity. You know, showing people a path of progression and a path to opportunity and that they can do it too, and setting an example of how you can move down that path.
Do you feel like you're transforming not only Baltimore and the state of Maryland, but the country by leading the way with this new approach to giving?
Potentially. This is something that we think that we can templatize and stamp out around other kind of post-industrial Rust Belt cities that have the same kind of economic situation that we have here in Baltimore. Sure.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you're the right guy to make this happen. You have been special your whole life, given the path you were set on by a special father who passed early and has this amazing legacy by a mother who instilled an open mind opportunity. Talk about the opportunity you have to really make a mark in the world.
Wow.
Now that you missed the opportunity being the first black president, as you told
Yeah, well, I missed that boat, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that... just the way America has progressed and the way cities and urban areas have come to kind of exist today, I think that there's an opportunity for, from thoughtful development and through thoughtful economic development to really close the divide and change perceptions around the way we live and work together today. And I think that we can set the model here in Baltimore. And it's not that something that we're doing, it's already began, and we're just really trying to accelerate the momentum.
Mm-hmm. Marcus, you are married or single?
I'm married, sir.
Mm-hmm. How many kids you got?
I have three kids. I have a 20-year-old son at Frostburg, junior at Frostburg, studying marketing and business.
So you have three kids. What's the similarity between being an entrepreneur and being a dad?
They're both full-time. You're never off the clock.
What's the website address for Plank Industries?
Plankindustries.com.
Let me have that one more time.
Plankindustries.com.
We've been speaking with Marcus Stevens, Executive Creative Director of Plank Industries, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Back in a moment, right after we take this break. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Laura Van Epperen, who is the... What's your title at Van Epperen?
So I'm the CEO of Van Epperen.
CEO of Van Epperen.
Strategic Communications Firm.
Strategic Communications Firm. And what is Van Epperen's Strategic Communications Firm? What are you guys doing?
So we do all things PR, marketing, advertising. We support our clients with their public awareness, outreach campaigns, try to educate the public about why they're great organizations to work with.
So you're all about communications. Where were you from originally?
So I'm an upper Midwesterner, cheesehead by birth in Wisconsin, but an adopted, transformed Maryland crab.
Where in Wisconsin?
So I grew up outside of Milwaukee,
blue-collar
Milwaukee.
What's the name of the town you came from?
Wauwatosa.
Wauwatosa. And how old were you, how young were you when you finally moved from Wauwatosa?
I went away to college, but I only went an hour.
Wow, so you're really a small town girl. When you were 10 years old, you told us your father owned the business. What kind of business was that?
My father owned a small grocery store.
Uh-huh. And did you ever work in that grocery store?
I worked alongside my father quite a bit.
You worked alongside your father quite a bit. And was it just groceries you sold, or was it other kinds of stuff you sold there?
It was convenience, it was quick in and out, but mostly groceries.
So you had some candy there,
exactly.
And some other kinds of stuff.
Coffee.
And did you help your dad figure out what merchandise to put in the store?
He largely took that on. I was there to help support him, stock the shelves, stock the cooler, get the candy organized, elevated to running the cashier,
And how long did you work there for? How many years did you work there?
Through college, when I came back on weekends, I worked there. Anytime I had
an
opportunity to make a buck, I was in there.
So you started working with in that store at the age of 10, and you did it through actually going for college,
To
college. And didn't you tell us a story about you felt frustrated when you were 10 years old? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, often when you're working in retail in a store setting, you wait for customers to come to you, right? You're twiddling your thumbs when it's slow, and you just want people to come in so that you're engaged, you're not bored, right? Being bored to me is...
Well, the other stuff is that, all that stuff sitting on the shelf. If you could just move it quicker, you can make more money as long as you sell it. So you felt frustrated. And tell us a little bit more about, did you have any ideas or about what you could do about that at that time?
Sure, I had a concept of marketing and advertising, but as a small business owner, you weigh, can I afford to spend that money to drive more business? And I think my dad struggled with that, and I felt like he wasn't as successful because he didn't always have those extra dollars to put into a marketing bucket or an advertising bucket. And so very frustrated as a young person seeing my father not be as successful as he deserved to be.
So you realize you got this marketing thing in your bones at a young age, at the age of 10, and is what do you do for a living? Is there a parallel between that and what you do nowadays?
So we support clients at Van Epperen to help them raise their visibility, to go get the customers, to educate customers, to educate the public, whomever their target audiences are, about the great organization our clients are, what they do, to go get them and make sure that our organizations, our clients, are as successful in reaching their audiences.
So you've walked in your clients' shoes. You know how they're feeling.
Absolutely. That's why we're so passionate and committed to our clients. We won't take on a client unless we are all in with them and we believe in their product, their brand, and we feel like we can do our best to go get their clients. We don't want them to waste their dollars. We don't want them to waste any of their time or resources. It's a big commitment to outsource communications consulting dollars, and we take that very seriously.
So you're not looking to go get a client and just take their money and, you know, not care. That's not who you
That's why I'm in business. That's why I'm an entrepreneur by default, Herb. I started my firm because I worked for other organizations where I didn't feel like that they were there and always had the client's best interest in mind. Really great on the sales side, not so great on the customer service side. So ethically, that's why I spun out and founded my own firm, because we have that direct commitment. Jeff Davis and I and our firm and our clients, you know, have that absolute commitment.
Jeff, I understand you're a partner in the firm. How long have you been a partner in the firm?
I've been a partner since for about 3 months now. I've been with the firm for over a year.
So what's it like working with her?
It's great. We both have the same, come from the same background, the same frame of mind, the same, you know, journalistic background as well. I was a newspaper reporter.
So you guys were journalists. What's that have to do with helping your clients, though? I'm trying to figure that out.
Well, it comes down to the storytelling and authentic storytelling. It's not slick, you know, made up messaging. It's real stories that we tell about our clients.
Wait a minute. I thought that's what marketing was about, was made up stories and slick stuff, you know, and the spin.
It's the true, you know, authentic, real is really what gets through.
And that's why I think our firm is so current right now, because that's the base we come from. We probably come from that approach to our clients. You know, we can add the advertising and the promotional element, but we want to get to the essence, the core of what clients are and who they are. And if they're really great and have the best interest in mind on behalf of their customers, those are the kind of clients we want to work with. And that's why I think we're one of the hottest firms here, especially in Maryland, the Mid-Atlantic, and certainly nationally.
So you're putting your finger, you want to put your finger on what authentically makes them special, what authentically makes them different, and then that's what you want to promote.
Absolutely. That's what people want. You know, at the end of the day, we're all smart consumers now, and you have access to way more information. You can research Marcus Stevens. You can hear from him directly on this radio show, and you can realize he's a great guy. He's a good guy. I want to support his organization, especially when he talks about how they're giving back to people who haven't had that opportunity and finding a way to really find the people that have the smarts but just haven't had the opportunity. So making that connection and innovating a new approach to economic development. I mean, Maryland is where it's at, in large part thanks to Plank Industries, Under Armour, and other great, many great organizations, Stanley
so
Becker, a lot of great organizations.
You're looking to identify what really makes an organization special, and then you're looking to promote that stuff. And I guess on an ongoing basis, it's just to keep aware and to keep in contact with the principals of the organization or the key people regarding what's changing, what's special, what's new.
Well, the leadership has to be special. They're the best ambassadors that can help tell the story. We can get people on the street to be ambassadors, and that's certainly an approach that we, you know, prescribe for our clients. But the leadership has to be authentic. It has to come from the heart. And if they're authentic and they can help tell them their story, and we can help position them to best tell their story, you know what? Watch out, world.
Well, what's the best part of your job? I mean, what do you really enjoy about your job?
Working with clients, right? Getting to help position them to best tell their story, have them tell their best story. That's what we're good at. We're really great at working with leadership. We have worked with many organizations.
So when you're sitting down with a client for the first time, your gig is not necessarily to sell them. It's also to get to know them, because there's really got to be a match.
Build
there.
The trust so that they trust us. We've been in this business a long time. We've been and worked across a lot of public and private organizations. We know. I mean, we don't want to create something that's false. We want them to be their best selves. So really getting their trust to work with us, know that we're the experts at really putting together approaches that make sense, and then executing. It's a trust thing like any good relationship, and that's why we have actual long-term relationships with our clients, which is part of our success.
It's interesting
as well.
You brought up the word relationship. I'm trying to figure out where that fits into the world of marketing. So you really want a relationship with your clients.
100%, you know, and their customers do too, you know.
Oh,
they believe in your brand.
Interesting. So you're helping your clients establish relationships with their clients.
It's about keeping it real, right? If your brand is real, if you have a great brand and you believe in it and you authentically can say we are doing our best, making the best product, using the best resources to make that product make the world a better place, so that we all boats rise.
It's all about rural.
Watch out, you know.
What's the website address of this organization?
So we're vanepperen.com.
It's, how do you spell that?
V-A-N-E-P as in Paul, E-R-E-N.com, vanepperen.com.
We've been speaking with Laura Van Epperen, CEO of Van Epperen, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. Learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this break. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-hosts, Laura Van Epperen and Jeff Davis from Van Epperen. I'd like to introduce Kathy Nice, Director of Marketing and Communications with Maryland Auto Insurance. Kathy, what is Maryland Auto Insurance? What makes you guys special?
Maryland Auto Insurance is an auto insurance company that provides insurance for drivers in Maryland who don't qualify in the standard market. So basically, if you've been canceled or turned down and for some reason don't qualify, we will write you.
Are these bad drivers?
They're not, and that's been a big part of our rebrand effort that we've made in the last couple of years at Maryland Auto. These are often people who are financially vulnerable. So these are folks that every month are making the decision between paying the rent or paying the car payment or paying the car insurance. And when they have to let the car insurance lapse, it sends them back to square one in terms of getting coverage. And that's where we step in to help bridge that gap.
So these are not necessarily folks that are bad drivers. These are folks that didn't pay a premium, and then all of a sudden the other insurance companies look poorly upon that.
The other insurance companies are not willing to offer a rate to them.
Gotcha.
And it also can be people who are new to this country, so they're driving on a foreign license, or they have no credit, or if you have some sort of glitch in your credit. We don't use credit scoring.
Where are you from originally?
Macon, Georgia.
And let's see, how many brothers and sisters?
I have one sister.
One sister, older or younger?
She's 11 years younger than I am.
All right. And you mentioned that when you were a kid, you were brought up by a single mom. Mom and dad were not together. And you mentioned that you started making money when you were young. How young were you when you started making money?
I would say when I was 10, 11, I was doing some babysitting.
What'd you do different than the other babysitters?
I think, I had to go the extra mile to try to make sure I got the callbacks to work again, right, because there was not a lot of money in my household. So if it took washing the dishes or doing some cleaning up after the kids or whatever needed to be done, I wanted to get that call back.
So you learned about going the extra mile in order to get the customer to come back again. And
yes.
You were 11, 12 years old when you realized that. And then you mentioned you got a job at a fast food place when you were 15. What was that all about?
So I worked at Crystal, which is a hamburger joint in Georgia, and I worked there for a very short period of time.
Why? What happened?
I got fired.
How'd you get fired?
I got fired because I called in sick on the night of a big high school football game, and I got fired humiliatingly in person in my brown polyester Crystal uniform in front of my coworkers.
Tell us about your mother's role.
They called my mom and told her they were going to fire me, and she did not share that with me because she thought it was an important lesson for me to go there and be humiliated in that way, so she let me do that.
So you went ahead, you went to work, and they fired you, and what did you learn from that experience?
Well, obviously that there are consequences, and that when you have a responsibility, you have to take that seriously, and also their financial results, right? So then I didn't have a job, so I had no gas, so I couldn't go anywhere. My fun time was limited.
But you learned that lesson pretty quick, huh?
I did.
And when you were 16, you got a job in a department store. What was that about?
I worked at the Belk's department store in Macon, and I worked in the credit department. So that was where if people were trying to shop on the floor in the old days before everything was electronic, they would call up to the credit department and see if someone could buy this shirt for $50 or whatever, and we could check that.
And did you like that job? Did you hate that job? What was that?
I liked that job. It felt a little, I was a high school student, obviously, and it felt a little bit like a step up from being the salesperson on the floor, right? We had an office and, a little more sophisticated.
And you had authority.
Yeah, maybe that's it, yeah.
Were you able, were there like gray areas where you had to make decisions?
Yep, we had, there were small dollar limits, but yeah, we could make a little bit of a
So you were exercising financial judgment at that point in time.
Yep.
Uh-huh. And what's that have to do? What did you learn from that experience that has anything to do with what you're doing nowadays?
Well, I've spent my career in the financial services industry. Obviously, I had a 25-year career at State Farm Insurance and then came over to Maryland Auto.
So I guess the reason you went to Maryland Auto is because you were making a lot more money. They headhunted you and they said, listen, we'll give you twice as much money or something?
Well, they did headhunt me, but they did not offer me a lot more money, unfortunately. But I know it's a very mission-driven organization, and there's a huge public policy component to this, obviously, in terms of we are very passionate about the fact that when we make insurance accessible to people who don't otherwise have it. It's much more than just insurance, right? It's access to a better life. If you can't get car insurance, you can't drive legally, you can't take your kids to school or to football practice, you can't go to work, you can't hold a job, you can't get your mom to the doctor, all the things you need to do, right? This is not about access to insurance. It's about access to a better life.
So, so you took this job because it was a mission as opposed to you were making more money.
It was a mission. That's a big part of it. And also provided me with an opportunity to build a team and really lead the rebrand of a 40-year-old organization, right? Which was something
much smaller. What do you mean a rebrand? What do you thought? What's a rebrand?
So in 2013, when I came over, the company was struggling, right, with this brand perception that this is a place for bad drivers, that everybody who's insured with Maryland Auto has a DUI or 15 speeding tickets, right?
Yeah.
And they needed to, the organization really needed to, before they could do advertising, dig into who we are. So it was really an opportunity for me to build the team, hire the right agency, and go through this in-depth soul-searching process of figuring out who are we, what do we do uniquely, what do we offer?
Wait a minute. You did this and you didn't do it because there was more money involved?
No, I did it because I believe in what we're doing.
Huh. What effect did your grandfather have on you?
So my grandfather was really the only father figure that I had in my life, and he was an amazing person, a strong and yet very loving person. He gave me my faith and taught me a lot about family.
What do you mean he gave you your faith?
From an organized religious standpoint, he was the person who took me to church, but much more than that, he was a kind, generous, open-hearted, loving person. And
What's that have to do? What's that have to do with being involved with this Maryland Auto Insurance?
That's what we do, right? It's about being open-hearted and understanding when people aren't bad people because they're in a bad place in life, right?
Give me that again.
You're not necessarily a bad person just because you're going through a bad spot. You're going through a rough spot in life, and we all need a hand, right? We all need help when at certain times in life. And I can look all across my life and see times when there were. Whether it was a parent or a grandparent or a teacher or a friend, somebody stepped in, and we never know when we're offering that one moment that's going to make a huge difference in somebody's life.
Laura, what were you thinking?
So, Kathy, talk about the policy component of this role. There's a policy and a passion component that seemed like the perfect point in your life probably to have arrived at this organization.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think I had done, in my work at State Farm, I had done some lobbying, so I like the public policy portion of things, and I obviously like the communication side of things, but I think you got to really believe in what you're talking about, and I always felt that at State Farm, and I feel it at Maryland Auto, too, right? When you're working for a company that really has a great story to tell and has taken the time to develop that authentic message, and they really care about their mission, then it's easy to be an advocate. It's easy to be a storyteller for an organization like that.
Mm-hmm. And talk about your mom, right? It sounds like your mom and your dad. You came from a hardworking background.
Yeah, my mom is salt of the earth. She worked in a cigarette factory until she retired a few years ago and waitressed on the weekends to take care of it. It was mostly just the two of us for most of my life. But she was also, I always describe my mom, as cliche as it sounds, as the ultimate steel magnolia. She's the hardest working, strongest person I know, but also the most loving. Our house was always full of people who needed a place to stay for a week or a month or a couple years, or somebody who needed a meal. I can remember driving people to homeless shelters who showed up on our porch at night. I mean, that's what she's all about. It's what she's always been about. So what I learned from my mom, the other thing I'll say is I never knew our life was hard. So I would say the thing I learned from my mom is that you can live through tough times but be really happy and having a great time in life and still have a lot of love to give to other people. And that's what I get from her.
Give me that again.
I think you can go through tough times on your own and not necessarily be unhappy. You can still enjoy life, right? And you can still give a lot of love to those who need it.
So the fact that you had all these other people hanging around the house, wasn't there painful and difficult, and because you guys were going through tough stuff not having a dad?
No, I think it was fun. I think it was always good to have lots of people around, right? And always fun. And it was just, it's like anybody else, it's what you grow up with. It's the norm, right? And there's always full of love. I have lots of cousins and people always in and out.
So you find comfort in others as opposed to when the going gets tough, you separate, you pull other people close. You find comfort in them. You feel safe trusting other people.
I find my comfort and my energy in people, absolutely.
What do you mean by that? You find your comfort and your energy in other people. What do you mean?
It's what I need, right? Just on a daily basis, or in good times, bad times, right? It's what makes me tick. It's how I function. It's how I have to recharge. I've had positions where I could work from home remotely a lot.
It says here you're the director of marketing and communications with an auto insurance company.
Right.
You're telling me that what turns you on is the energy and comfort of other people?
That's right.
Not the money. But I read about insurance companies all the time. And you're the director of communications here, and you're telling me it's not the money. In fact, you took a job not for more money, but because it had the right mission. And it's an auto insurance company. That's different than what I read in the newspapers, though.
I think the property and casualty industry, there are a lot of great stories to tell there, right? Whether you're talking about auto insurance or homeowners insurance, if you think about the disasters that happen in this country, natural disasters, who are the first? They're right among the first responders are the insurance companies that are there. They're on the ground with generators, with food, with water, you know, that are truly there to help their policyholders and others.
Mm-hmm. Are you married or single?
I'm married.
You have any
29
kids?
Years. I have two kids.
Uh-huh. Similarity between being a mom and being the director of marketing communications. Similarity.
Lots of irons and lots of fires, lots of stuff going on, and lots to be proud of all the time.
Ah, so you're juggling a lot of stuff and you're proud of a lot of stuff. What's the website address of Maryland Auto Insurance?
It's mymarylandauto.com.
Let me have that again.
MyMarylandAuto.com.
MyMarylandAuto.com. We've been speaking with Kathy Nice, Director of Marketing and Communications at Maryland Auto Insurance here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this break. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. I'd like to introduce John Cunningham, President and Founder of License to Innovate. John, what is License to Innovate? What are you guys doing?
Morning, Herb. How you doing?
What is License Innovate?
License Innovate is a company that partners with small businesses and inventors and really helps them get their product to market.
Give me that again. You help inventors get their products to market, right?
Correct. Yeah.
All right. Where are you from originally?
Originally from Dundalk, Maryland.
And how many brothers and sisters?
I have two sisters, two older sisters.
Two older sisters. What did having two older sisters do to you?
We were raised in a family that was very competitive, and a lot of times when I would bring home my report card, I would bring home a report card with, you know, all A's and one B, and was compared to my sisters. And my oldest sister was a smart one in the family, so I was always compared to her and said that you can do better. So I was always challenged and pushed to push myself and, you know, and look around and be competitive.
All right. So you grew up with two sisters that kept on raising the bar for you. How young were you when you started making money?
I was 11 years old.
And what were you doing?
I was a paper boy. And back then, as a paper boy, you were responsible for everything from buying the papers to collecting the cash from the customers. And really, at 11 years old, started to understand the importance of cash flow.
It sounds to me like your nature is both to identify opportunity, not only to identify the opportunity, but also to see business as a process. You couple the two together. Am I correct about that?
Absolutely. I've my 20 years in corporate America, I saw a lot of great ideas, a lot of great inventors come through the doors and leave the offices probably dismayed or disheartened because the process is very complicated and they probably didn't have the right presentation or the right business plan to be successful. So I took it upon myself to really help them kind of be successful.
So a chain's only as good as its weakest link. If you don't pay attention to all the different pieces, the devil's in the details, the chain's going to break.
Absolutely.
And you saw that at 11 years old as a newspaper boy where you realized there was a process in place.
I realized that, you know, I didn't get paid unless I collected the cash.
As well as deliver the newspaper.
As well as have great customer service.
Well, at 15, you got a job as a stock boy. What was that about?
Sure. I worked at a company called J.J. Newberry, and I was doing everything from cleaning windows and cleaning floors to stocking shelves and pricing out product. And again, saw business firsthand and was at least astute enough as a financial guy. I was very curious about how things worked and ultimately how companies made money.
So what did you do different than all the other stock boys that had that job?
You know, I was very passionate about my work, so I was very proud. So I'd make sure I go the extra mile, do the extra wipe to make sure the windows were clean and make sure the floors were clean. And I'd look back and make sure, you know, everything was to a standard that was higher than the next guy.
So your nature is to do things correct the first time.
Do things right. That's my motto is do it right the first time. And, you know, it whether it's business, whether it's relationships, whether it's processes, it's simply just it's easier to do it right first.
A little bit earlier, Laura, you were talking, you said you knew some stuff about John, about some of the philanthropic stuff he's doing. And it seems to me that this do it right the first time, you know, in sixth gear is coming through again. What was that all about?
So, John, you are an amazing chair of the Baltimore Gala of Make-A-Wish Mid-Atlantic. You treat it like a job. It just seems like you have this deep level of commitment to whatever you do. Is that just ingrained within you, and do you get that from your parents, or...
Yeah, I think a lot of it goes back to, you know, delivering papers. It's a everyday job. I mean, you're working 7 days a week, and people rely. Back then, we didn't have the internet, so people relied on newspapers to get the information. So you knew that you were an integral part of their life. And
boy, you're taking that responsibly. I mean, you weren't just some kid delivering newspapers. You really realized the responsibility where people wanted their newspapers.
I wanted that extra tip so that I could make a little bit more
money. Yeah, but it was more than that. It sounds to me like you were really responsible about things. But where'd you get that from? Was that mom or dad?
I would say it's probably my dad was probably, you know, the influence of saying, you know, do a good job and, you know, keep your head down, put your nose to the grindstone and just do it right.
What did your dad do for a living?
My dad was a police officer.
I'm trying to figure out how a police officer and an entrepreneur are the same thing. I'm not sure I understand.
I think a lot of it is process of going through, whether it's procedures. I mean, as a police officer, you have certain rules and regulations you have to follow. So he was a guy who followed the rules. He was enforcing the law. So I think a lot of it was what he taught me was just you have to follow the rules, but you also have to go that extra mile, and you have to protect and serve was their motto. And he kind of enforced every day from seeing him in his uniform to his car, protect and serve was always there.
How about mom? What'd you get from mom that you bring to work every day?
Yeah, I think that my mom was probably more the caring side of making sure emotionally that you're in check, and that emotionally that you're very calm and collected. And
But I'm trying to figure out what you bring from mom to work every day.
I think the caring aspect. I mean, I work with inventors.
Caring? What are you talking about?
Well, I work with inventors. I work with a lot of people that have great ideas, and just may not have the experience to bring their product to market. So they're so passionate, and they want to fulfill their life mission. And I'm there just to help out and be part of the journey with them, which makes it
so
very rewarding
for us. Why don't you just lie to them? Tell them that they got a great idea and tell them to cut you a check. What's caring have to do with any of this?
I mean, my business model is a little unique. Most of my fees are on the back end, so I'm not there to make a quick buck. I'm really in there for, for that long journey. If they're successful, I'll be successful. And, that's probably a unique business model that most people don't follow. Most people charge by the hour or the engagement, where we charge by the success of the project.
Huh, interesting. So you really want to get to know your clients so that if you do a deal with them, you know you're on the same page.
We're working together. I mean, side by side, it's not a job. It's a mission.
Uh-huh. How old is this business?
It's about a year and a half old.
So were you married when you started this business?
I was.
Did you talk to your wife about the idea first?
I did. She's been really supportive since we've been married. So
why would she be supportive? I mean, this is like, you can lose the house or something. I mean, you're starting a business. Most businesses fail. Why would you do this?
My wife and I, we gave birth to our son, our oldest son, early. And we went through trials and tribulations. We went through college and raised the kid through college. We saw a lot of the hardships, and we stuck together. We made it work, and she has full confidence in me, and she knows that I'll work
24/7. You guys really have a relationship. What's the website address for this organization?
It's L2IGlobal.com.
Let me have that one more time.
L2IGlobal.com.
We've been speaking with John Cunningham, president and founder of Listen to Innovate, as well. We had the opportunity of speaking with Marcus Stevens, executive creative director, Plank Industries, Laura Van Apperin, CEO of Van Apperin, Kathy Nice, director of marketing communications, Maryland Auto Insurance, and again, most recently, John Cunningham, president and founder of License to Innovate. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Laura Van Apperin and Jeff Davis from Van Apperin, for giving me a hand structuring the questions. Hopefully providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. It's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. Thank you for joining us today, and do have a nice day, and we'll catch you with the next show. Bye-bye.